Would you believe it? It's that time of the week again. Time for Tech Plus. And my name is still Ion, and your name's still Kane, eh?
No, nothing's changed in that regard. But a lot has happened in tech. I mean, it's not every week that you have Facebook, Sony, Netflix, and Spotify all in the, you know, in the new spotlight.
Yeah.
Good and bad.
Yeah, good and bad.
Good and bad, and we're going to get into that. I mean, I think from Facebook's side, Facebook had a big issue over the last week. Their shares plunged more than 20% on weak earnings, which was apparently a big forecast miss. And one thing I'm going to get into now is actually what their expectations were versus reality, and how actually cutthroat the industry is in terms of achieving what you say your expected growth is. So basically, Facebook's earnings came in below expectations for the fourth quarter, and the company said numerous challenges are ahead in the first quarter. Inflation, supply chain disruptions at advertisers, and users shifting to products that monetize at lower rates are among some of the key issues that the company faces, and revenue in the first quarter will be between 27 and 29 billion, opposed to what the analysts were looking for, which was to top $30 billion. So because they made 27 to 29 billion instead of 30 billion, their shares dumped 20%.
Sure.
Now, when you think about it like that, that's pretty scary.
It is.
That's pretty scary. So Facebook shares tumbled 20% in extended trading on Wednesday after the company reported its disappointing earnings, which gave weak guidance and said user growth has stagnated. So here are the true earnings and some of the analysis of this mark that they've met. So earnings per share was $3.67 versus the supposedly $3.84. The revenue, which was supposed to be $33.4 billion, was only $33.67 billion. And daily active users were 1.93 billion opposed to the expected 1.95 billion. And I think that's crazy. You know, they're missing these marks by, you know, small percentages.
Yeah.
But they face massive, massive investor turmoil as people, you know, dump the shares that they have. And now they've, you know, they've dropped 20%.
Sure.
Which is frightening.
I wonder if the whole thing that's happening with Spotify is also affecting their market share.
I think so. I don't think it's directly relevant, but I do think that, you know, these platforms are facing big turmoil right now, especially from an investor standpoint, because where are you keeping your money for 2022?
Mm.
Well, you're definitely not going to keep it in a place that has turmoil or potential downfall ahead of it when you're just trying to make sure your money's capitalizing itself for you, you know.
Mm.
And that's a big problem. But also in other news, the Spotify boss says it's too early to know Joe Rogan's impact. So the Joe Rogan podcast averages 11 million listeners an episode, and musicians including Neil Young and Joni Mitchell asked for their music to be removed from the platform after criticism that the US broadcaster has helped to spread COVID misinformation.
So that's what it's all about. People feel that they're spreading false information.
Yeah, they feel like Joe Rogan's using his platform to spread misinformation.
Which is on Spotify. Okay.
But I feel like that might not necessarily be the case. You know, to have all angles of a story as a podcaster is more favorable than only having one angle of a story.
Exactly, yeah.
So he just brings on people that he feel have a unique outlook on the situation and might be informative to listeners. But I think it's quite overboard to have musicians on Spotify say, if you don't remove this creator,
yeah,
and this artist, we're going to leave. And imagine the turmoil if you were an up and coming artist, and you know, you maybe are trying to get in, like I said off air, you know, you're trying to get into the music industry.
Yeah.
And Lil Wayne says he's going to leave Spotify if you dare join it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of behavior is just non-tolerable.
Yeah.
I think there's other ways to solve problems, like using your platform and your audience to create awareness is more powerful than using your platform to try and get someone else's content forcefully removed.
Right? Yeah.
You can put policies and things in place to prevent that kind of behavior. You know, you can tell Spotify that he may, what about if Joe Rogan doesn't post anything about COVID misinformation, you know, versus saying we're leaving if he's staying, you know.
But can't he just have like a disclaimer at the beginning of every podcast?
Yeah, I think his legal team probably has the correct kind of stuff, but I think just with COVID and things like that, it's such a sensitive subject that people are so easily, you know, tilted by certain information. And if Joe Rogan brings on someone that's very right wing or very left wing, you know, in terms of their thinking, it's definitely going to offend some people. I'm just very surprised that actual magicians were like, no, get him out of here. You know, that's heavy. That's like malicious as you get.
Yeah, definitely.
But the streaming company shares also fell. And they fell by 10%.
Okay. Oh, there's the answer.
So I was not wondering. As bad as Facebook, but pretty bad nonetheless.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. And then, you know, on the Netflix front, what's happening on the Netflix front? Okay, we're going to talk about one of their new features soon. But there's a price hike also. I don't know if you notice you're paying a bit more now for Netflix.
This thing's going to make me broke.
But it's not the lower end packages. It's just the higher ones. The standard plan increasing from 139 Rand per month to 159 Rand per month. And then premium jumping from 169 Rand per month to 199 Rand a month. So 30 Rand increase on the prices. The prices of the mobile and basic plans remain the same at 49 Rand and 99 Rand. But listen, this was the first price increase since they launched in South Africa in January 2016. So not really? Too bad, eh? Not too bad.
No, it's not too bad. It's not too bad. Then again, I haven't seen, I might be wrong, but I don't think I've seen Amazon Prime's prices increase or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't mind the price increasing, but when you extrapolate that 20 Rand over, you know, 100 million people, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Really a lot of money. But tell us about that new feature. You can now, apparently you can remove half-watched shows.
Oh, yeah.
How does that work?
So now, obviously, when you're watching Netflix, right, let's say you're trying a new TV show and you think, okay, you know, let's give this TV show a try. And you start watching an episode or two and you're like, hell to the nah. I'm gonna go back to Modern Family. I'm gonna go watch The Office or something like that, you know. And now Netflix is finally, so once you've watched that, now when you come back to Netflix the next day and you go to your continue watching section, there's shows on there that you don't watch, that you tried and it's just not interesting to.
How do you get rid of them?
Now you can get rid of them.
Okay, that was a bit of an annoyance, eh?
Yeah, because you would watch something that's just utterly terrible and then it would taunt you every time.
Yeah, it's still showing. Watching. That's right.
So now Netflix has basically added the ability for, or added the option for you to remove shows from your continue watching list. It should be available to you right away on any platform. And the service has already been, you know, kind of implemented. So you should now be able to remove shows from your continue watching list.
Hmm.
And I like that customizability.
Yeah.
I even think, you know, your wish list on Netflix is a bit underdeveloped. You know, when you see something coming soon and you want to be reminded about it. The only time I really get reminded about it is it's like top 10 in South Africa. You know, that's my reminder. So it's nice to see some of this functionality. I think it should have just been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, that's like something that should have just been there. I don't think it's like recreating the wheel.
Yeah.
But these kind of things are important. They could have just never been done anyway. So that's a cool little bit of functionality. No Netflix share price change though.
What would you like to see if there's a feature you would like, you'd be able to add to Netflix? What would you like to add? Is there something that you feel is missing there?
Yeah, let me get an SMS or an email when a show just goes live, you know, the ones that are coming soon or in the popular section that are like coming this week.
I get a push message from the app that comes up when a new show just dropped.
No, they don't like me that much.
So you're not getting that.
Maybe I have to pay for the top Netflix.
No, maybe it's just your push notifications that aren't on, or maybe your phone's blocking it. Or in your case, I think your phone's too busy. Maybe you just miss it. Because let me tell you, people, you should see this guy's notifications on his phone.
Really?
Yeah. Your phone's hectic.
Yeah, my phone's just...
Your phone's hectic. Your screen's almost always full.
Yeah. I have to turn off like notifications on certain apps, especially messaging apps, because there's so many of them.
Yeah, it's blowing up.
Yeah, when I wake up in the morning, it's like not even a lob, it's just a string of like incoming messages.
We heard them a little bit earlier. Kane, what have you got for us when we come back?
When we come back, we're going to take a look at a very interesting article about a Chinese man that created the world's largest power bank with 27 million milliamps.
Okay, well, can we get him to South Africa as soon as possible? Well, getting back to Tech Plus, Kane, what have you got for us? Yet another interesting story there.
So we're taking a look at the story of a man in China who created the world's largest power bank with a 27 million ampere capacity, which is said to charge over 5,000 phones.
Yo!
With a 3,000
at the same
battery.
Time.
Yeah, at the same time.
Goodness.
Now, this thing is humongous.
How do you store all that energy, I want to know? And how long does it take to charge? Are you going to tell us?
I am. Okay, and the interesting thing is the creator claims that the power bank can run TVs, washing machines, and charge electric scooters too. Okay, this thing is absolutely gigantuan. It looks like a normal power bank, but that has gone up, you know, maybe 100 times in size. So it looks like a table, like a dining room table almost.
I'm sure,
but like one of those coffee tables, you know, the lower coffee tables, in the shape of a power bank. Here, take a look at it. You can see what it kind of looks like. It's absolutely massive. It's unbelievably massive.
Yeah, you're right. It's it almost looks like a coffee table. And then imagine all your friends around this coffee table. They keep coming to drink coffee at your place to charge their phones. That's a lot of phones.
So it is created by a YouTuber, actually.
Really?
The power bank is created by an innovator who goes by the name of Handy Geng. The power bank can also charge electric scooters and run home appliances. Handy Geng is an innovator who works on outrageous homemade projects. So he's a Chinese electronics handyman and influencer who created the batteries. And he basically said, "It seems everyone has a bigger power bank than mine. I'm not so happy with that. So I made a 27 million milliamp portable charger power bank." A report by MySmartPrice stated that Geng estimates his power bank has the capacity to charge 5,000 phones with a 3,000 milliamp battery. And the crazy thing is he's actually got a video on YouTube where he's got his TV, a freezer, all sorts of stuff plugged into this massive power bank.
Damn.
And obviously you can't go carrying around a coffee table on the bus, you know. it's not practical. But in South Africa, if you have an alternative other than a generator, you know, that has all this capacity, you can maintain a decent amount of electronics within your household on a single power bank.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he's going to release it commercially or if it was just a gimmicky thing.
I have a feeling it's just going to be his thing.
I think it's just a once-off thing.
But I want to open it up and see what's inside. Like, how many batteries are inside?
So he said it's akin to an electric car's batteries.
So how many would you have in there? There's a lot of space.
It's probably smaller batteries that are all collected in there, whether it's 5 of them or 500 of them. That's definitely an enclosure with many connected batteries that are either a few very big ones or many very small ones. But I think it's so crazy to think that a random person can go out and make that.
Yeah,
you know?
Where would you even start? But listen, now load shedding is back. You know, it's been really quiet. And we had January, no load shedding at all. Did we have load shedding in December?
No.
I can't remember. When went and last did we have November?
I think it was November.
So it was really quiet. Everything was just going well. And then this week they said, hello, it's back, stage 2. So, Ken, you know, it would be nice if we can have some South Africans inventing stuff like this guy with his rechargeable coffee table thing, don't you think?
I think so. I think we need solutions like this, because load shedding yesterday, for example, I had 5 hours of no power on a working day.
Sure.
Even though it was only Wednesday, for me every day is like Monday. I need every bit of time I can.
So what did you do? How did you manage?
Stress. That's what I did.
Oh, shame, man. Yeah.
I
now you've got a backlog.
With my teeth.
Yeah. It's not cool. So have you considered any backup solutions?
Yeah, moving out the country. No, I'm joking.
I've heard a lot of people say that, actually, and they were serious.
The battery pack sounds like a good idea. If there was something commercially available like that, I'd probably look into that before. for a generator. I just don't like generators. I don't like having a quad bike in the back of my house.
That freaking noise.
Yeah.
Even if you put it in one of those soundproof boxes, no. You know, that gas and all that stuff.
It's loud, and unless you have a big house or it's on the side of the house that isn't really inhabited much, it's fine. But if it's a smaller house like mine, your whole walls are vibrating. You have, you know, picture frames falling off of the wall.
Listen, I once worked for a company and they had, it was just after school, and they had a generator. And they had this generator in the garage. The garage was also the kitchen. It was kind of like a home made into an office. And they switched it on right there, connected to the mains, in the garage with no open doors or anything.
No. That must have been so loud.
Yes, but also the gas.
Yeah.
I think we almost died. I was like, went to the kitchen for some tea and like, hey, I can't breathe. And this is super loud. Aren't you supposed to open the window? Because that's poisonous.
I think
gas.
It's supposed to be outside. I mean, yeah. it's like taking a car and running it in your garage with all the
that's
windows
it.
Closed.
Exactly. And you know what happens when you do
monoxide
that?
Monoxide poisoning.
Yeah. You know? So we were almost poisoned by this guy who can't think for himself.
At least it wasn't in the kitchen.
Yeah, but at least we had electricity.
Yeah. You can die with the lights on.
But listen, Eskom is they're really battling, eh? I know that they say that the current bout of load shedding is because of generation capacity and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of it also has to do with sabotage. I mean, the sabotage is so bad. Somebody said to me earlier this week that they go to the pylons and they cut off the steel at the foot.
Yes.
Like, the foot of the pylons. And they cut it off, and then they take some more, and they take some more, and next guy comes around, he takes some more as well, and then eventually the thing just falls over because there's no support structure anymore. They just keep taking the stuff from the bottom. So what's going to hold it up now, you know?
Yeah.
Then it collapses, it takes the power lines with it, and, I mean, you know what happens. It can even start a massive fire. So it's so bad that Eskom actually hired 450 additional security guards to keep an eye on it. And also, they're using, this is really cool, using drones equipped with infrared cameras to help protect its infrastructure. So if you go and cut all that steel, you might have a drone hovering over you with infrared camera, and they'll know what you look like.
I wonder if they're just going to see what you look like and take a note of it, or whether they'll call some people in as soon as they see you, or whether the drone will just
attack you.
Send, you
yes,
know, like
I was,
a crow.
I was, yeah, I think the drone should attack you, yeah. Yeah. And like, maybe the drone can release some pepper spray or
like
something.
Some pepper bullets or something, you know, just to keep the pressure on.
Yeah, but it's so bad that it actually got to this, eh, where the pylons actually collapse because people steal the steel. And then they try and steal the power lines as well, but they never really succeed. I mean, they die.
No, yeah, there's been some bad cases of people getting electrocuted.
Like, they just
like
cremated on the spot.
Yeah,
you know,
you don't walk away from that. You know, you just brush it off.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not. So here's something else that's very interesting. So we all know about the PS5, right? The PlayStation 5. So Sony only managed to sell or ship 3.9 million PlayStation 5s in the first quarter of 2021. The tech giant Sony on Wednesday said it shipped those PlayStation 5 consoles in the festive season of 2021, and according to The Verge, it's a slight bump over the previous quarter's figure of 3.3 million, demonstrating how the electronics giant is still struggling to meet demand during the ongoing global supply chain crunch. Specifically the chip shortages as well. Only 17.3 million units in total have been shipped as of December 31, nearly 3 million fewer than the PlayStation 4 had managed at the equivalent point after its release. The gaming division's revenue was down 8% year-on-year to 813 billion yen, or $7.1 billion, but operating profit rose 12.1% to 92 billion yen, or $810 million. Sony's crucial image sensor division had a good quarter, with sales increasing 22%. But still, the slumps of the chip shortage are knocking, you know, almost everything. I'm sure you've seen on TikTok people struggling to buy a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
To actually source a PlayStation 5 and purchase it is incredibly difficult. And these kind of things are only going to continue to happen as tech evolves and things become more easily accessible and more easily affordable. You get to the point where, you know, they're talking about 17 million total PlayStation 5. So if you own a PlayStation 5, you're one of 17 million. There is 60 million people just in South Africa, you know. There is 7 billion people across the face of the earth.
Yo.
To meet that demand, if we continue to grow, you know, exponentially and that these kind of things become easier to acquire and more realistic and all that sort of stuff, how is PlayStation, how is Xbox, how are these kind of companies going to keep up with the demand, especially when you consider the same chips are used for phones, the same chips are used for other advanced other advanced electronics. How do you maintain that kind of stuff? And it's really concerning because it's not sustainable, actually. You know, the PlayStation 5 will come out and maybe 30 million units will be sold, or 50 million, or maybe even we're lucky and 100 million units are sold. Then the PlayStation 6 comes out and we're back to square one again. You know, new chips are needed, chip shortages are happening. So it's really tough for these kind of people to compete against each other, keep prices low while still maintaining actual supply to demand ratios. It's very, very concerning.
Sure.
But that's not the only thing for Sony. So Sony has also acquired Bungie, which is the developer of Destiny and Halo. Those are games.
Okay.
Halo is a very popular game. It's quite an OG game, been around for a couple of years. Destiny as well, also a very OG game, very, very popular. So a mere fraction of what Microsoft Gaming paid for Activision's Blizzard a few weeks ago, remember we spoke about that. PlayStation Sony has acquired Bungie, the development studio is best known for creating the Halo Xbox leading sci-fi shooter and for its open world shooter Destiny. Herman Halst said, "I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome Bungie to the PlayStation family. Bungie creates community-driven games with outstanding technology that are enormously fun to play. And I know that everyone at PlayStation Studios will be excited about what we can share and learn together. The deal reportedly closed at $3.6 billion and apparently doesn't come as a reaction to Microsoft's massive deal earlier this year. According to the sources, the deal had been in discussion for around 6 months before it was closed yesterday. Bungie's world-class expertise in multi-platform development and live game services will help them deliver their vision of expanding PlayStation to hundreds of millions of genres. And the good news is, Bungie Development Studios will continue to produce games for all platforms. So it's not just a PlayStation exclusive, which is a big problem at the moment with all the PlayStation-only exclusive games. Which is actually quite frustrating because I'm quite an avid fan of Spider-Man, and Spider-Man came out on Avengers, on the Avengers game, but only to PlayStation consoles. And it was very poorly developed and just quite embarrassing actually to release something like that. So it's going to be I'm glad that at least there's cross-platform support. And in bigger news, listen to this is crazy. So do you know Andrew Forrest?
No.
He's an Australian billionaire.
Okay.
And a while ago, back in 2019, a lot of Facebook ads were like prompting Ponzi schemes or crypto Ponzi schemes specifically, you know, utilizing celebrities' faces and things like that in order to advocate or advertise these Ponzi schemes. So now an Australian billionaire has launched a criminal case against Facebook, alleging the company failed to prevent scam ads that used his image. Andrew Forrest argues Facebook breached Australian anti-money laundering laws over the spread of cryptocurrency cons. He said it was the first time Facebook was facing a criminal case globally, and Facebook's owner Meta did not comment on Forrest's case, but said it was committed to keeping those people or scammers off of their platform. Dr. Forrest, who is a chairman of miner Fortescue Metals, alleged Facebook had criminally reckless in not doing more to halt the ads, which first appeared in early 2019. And you would think, okay, well, a few people got scammed, not so bad, right? But one guy that got scammed, one victim in Australia, lost $670,000 because of a fake endorsement featuring Andrew Forrest.
Oof.
Now, here's my question. Okay, you're browsing Facebook. This is like a completely different era of people. You're browsing Facebook. You see a Facebook ad. It's got a famous actor on, you know, maybe Tom Cruise, Will Smith, or Andrew Forrest, and he's advocating a Ponzi scheme. So you go take out just north of $1 million and throw it into the Facebook ad.
Wouldn't you just, at least if you really want to do it, just invest a little bit less than that? Why would you go all out?
$60.
Yeah.
Like $670. You know? That's like 10 million rand. It's like
just like that. No, you know, you actually, if you're stupid like that, you deserve it.
Yeah. Like, that's a lot of money to just throw at a Facebook ad. I mean, it's like going to Facebook and being like, oh, look at this new electronic. It's only $500,000 or like 7 million rand. Yeah, I'm going to buy it. It seems legit.
Yeah. And usually
there's no security, but it seems legit. Yeah.
Exactly. But you know, another scammer's paradise, we're going to talk about it just after our music break, is, you know, OLX Online Classifieds?
Yes.
They've closed, eh? Welcome back to Tech Plus, and just before the music break, we mentioned that OLX is, well, already closed this week here in South Africa.
No, Naspers
closed it this week. Now, do you remember, I mean, do you remember when OLX was launched? I can't remember when it was launched, but do you remember when it was launched, the massive ad campaigns they had?
Yeah.
On TV and radio. I mean, they must have spent millions on it.
Yeah.
You remember, like, somebody would sit in the garage with all these things cluttered around them, and then somebody would just say, sell it, and then OLX, remember?
Yes, yes.
So they had quite a good marketing campaign, memorable one, and yeah. I mean, that's what you want, a memorable marketing campaign like Celsi back in the day when they still did some good ads. But yeah, Naspers closed its OLX Online Classifieds website in South Africa, saying the move was done so it can focus its customer proposition fully on its property and motor vehicle platforms. They just released a statement on Tuesday saying that OLX South Africa is no longer available, but we can still help you find your new car or property, and then it just directs you to Auto Trader or Property24, also of course owned by Naspers. But I think they're not giving us the real reason. I see that consumers commented on it and said good riddance, because apparently OLX turned into our very own Craigslist. It was a scammer's paradise. With
scams everywhere.
Have you been on OLX? OLX recently?
So
why? Why would it attract so many scammers on one site? Are they not filtering it properly, or why would everybody
scammers
go there?
Scammers go where people are buying, and scammers go where they are under the least resistance to perpetuate these scams. And
so now they're all gone.
Yeah, no, the site's gone. I used to post something scammers on OLX, yes. Then I get a message, someone wants to buy it, and then you get this like Bank of America transaction proof of payment.
But really?
No, it's a disaster.
Have you been scammed, or did you catch
him
up?
Yeah, you know, there's been a few Nigerian incidents, never really get scammed. I just, you can see a scam as a scam, you know, just the way they deal with themselves. Like the one time I think I put my bike on OLX, and a guy from, like, I think it was Zimbabwe or Namibia or Nigeria was buying a bike for his son, so he wanted to pay for the bike plus an extra 20,000 rand. And I ship it down all the way out of South Africa.
Why not buy it in your own country?
You know,
that's very dodgy. Yeah.
You know, that was the one case. I did a few pieces of electronics, and you get this guy who says, okay, he's going to pay, and then it's a fake payment, proof of payment, that never comes into your account.
That's an old one.
And whatever, it's on Gumtree as well. Make no mistake, people browse Gumtree, but OLX, it was happening as well. And it's just like, I don't use OLX anymore for that reason.
Well, now you can't use it anyway.
I bet you it's for the scams. It doesn't sound make sense otherwise.
I wonder, but where are all the scammers going to go now?
There's Gumtree.
So Gumtree is still going?
Yeah, Gumtree is used quite a lot. There's
Don't you think Facebook Marketplace will ultimately lead to Gumtree's demise?
There's scams on Facebook Marketplace.
I'm sure,
especially
it's
when
possible,
you're buying cars. My brother was looking for a car for himself to buy.
What happened?
Well, there's a pre-auction car, you know. if you don't put down a deposit for this car, it goes to auction. So put down the deposit in the meantime of 5,000 to 15,000 rand, and then you can come look at the car before it goes to auction. You know, these are the kind of scams that are all over the place.
Yeah, you see, but they make it so believable. And no, like we said last week or the week before, you know, they add images and links and all that kind of stuff. Really, the logos, everything. Like we spoke about Capitec.
Yeah.
It looks like the actual real thing, but it isn't. And then you, unfortunately, you only realize that once your money is gone.
No, and the scams really are rampant. I actually got a scam message just this morning. Actually, just last night at 10:30. It's like, Luno BTC trader, your Luno BTC account will be deactivated today. If not verified, tap this link to verify now. Scam.
Ah, verified, 100%. Yeah. Listen, now you talk about this verification thing. Can you freaking believe it that a few weeks ago I received an email on all our domain address emails?
Yes.
On the radio domain email addresses. We received emails saying that the password for the email address is expiring. Click this link to verify it and enter a new password. Can you believe it?
Scam.
Why would your email provider ask you to do something like that?
No.
Your password is never going to expire. Do not click on
and
those
bots
links.
Bots do that stuff. They go and they scrape your website and then find all the associated emails and then send out an email.
Oh, okay.
It's all done automated. It's
phishing. I was wondering. Phishing, yes, that's it.
It's called phishing. So they just have a list or a database of people that clicked the links and filled in information, then go and act upon that in a different department. Scams are rampant, eh? It's like not a joke actually anymore. And I think to myself, especially when you digest this this SMS that I got last night, you know, your account will be deactivated today. It's scare tactics.
Yeah.
It's rush tactics. You know, make you have a nervous breakdown tactics kind of thing. And any unsuspecting victim will just go and do what they need to do. And it's so. And what can Luno do or OLX do actually to stop this from happening?
It's not much you can do, eh?
No, once the scammers are there, it's like a virus.
You're right. Know? They multiply and then eventually it's an amount you can't manage anymore.
Yeah, they learn to leverage your system. You know,
whatever infrastructure
you have in place, they know it back to front.
You're right.
And you end up in a position where you have to change your infrastructure to avoid that stuff happening.
Jeez, man.
It's not an easy thing to do. So the next thing that I want to go over is also quite interesting. So it's the Starlink premium internet.
I'm burning to talk about it. Listen, Elon's got a price tag on that thing, eh?
Yeah.
But would that now be if you in like a really remote location where it isn't possible to have any fiber optic lines to you or any wireless internet? Would you then opt for internet coming from space?
So I think so. I think that's where it has a very valid application. I think some people also existing infrastructure isn't necessarily there. So sometimes the internet that you can get to your home won't necessarily be as fast as Starlink's premium internet service. So even if you are in a city area, sometimes internet to that capacity isn't available. I think they advertised speeds of 150 to 500 megabytes per second.
Sure.
Which is, I think, the fastest fiber internet I can get at the moment, at least. What I've seen is 200 megs a second. So it's at least twice as fast as what my current fastest fiber connection can be. And it starts at 150 to 500 megs and a latency of 20 to 40 ms, which is very good. Do you want to tell everyone what the price is though?
Okay, so that's for the premium one, eh?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh dear, it's a lot of money. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
Okay, so the higher package will cost subscribers. It's per month. It looks like a per year amount, like an annual amount. Anyway, 7,640 rand a month.
Yeah.
And the equipment is priced at 38,200 rand.
So you drop 40k, you get the equipment.
Basically.
And then every month you spend 7.5.
Yeah.
To maintain it.
Yeah, it's basically 8.
Yeah. I'll be broke very quickly.
Yeah, even if you're a hotel out there in the middle of nowhere and you desperately need internet, I mean, would you be able to afford this? Even if you're a 5-star hotel.
Yeah, well,
that's a lot of money for internet
per month. You know, 50 grand first month, 7.5 every other month after that.
Listen, if I pay 7,640 rand per month for internet, it better be perfect. Better be fast and no downtime.
Well, that's 100% rent money, uptime. You know, you can pay
that's your rent, yeah.
You can pay that for
imagine
rent.
Imagine paying the internet, but you can't pay a rent.
50% for internet, 50% for rent.
Yeah, but if you pay that much, I don't care about solar storms or anything, that internet better be bloody good.
Very.
No interruptions, ever.
Zero.
Never, ever.
It's too expensive otherwise, but I think they understand that, and if they probably realize that, hey, if we're giving subscribers the most affordable equipment to connect, it's going to be a degraded quality or a lower quality connection because of trying to keep it affordable. So I can see in the boardroom that they had the conversation was like, okay, well, what equipment will give you the absolute best connection? And I think this is their solution to that.
And that's the price tag.
That's the price tag. So the premium plan actually requires, if you're outside of South Africa, the premium plan requires a $500 deposit and a $2,500 kit that includes the satellite antenna, Wi-Fi router, base, and cables. No contracts are required, but Starlink is provided on a first-come, first-served basis.
Mm-mm.
I want to get it just to see, but it's 50,000 rand.
Is there no trial run, Elon?
Trial?
Can we have a 30-day trial, mate?
I've had a great 15 days. Can I have my 50,000 back? You guys can keep the equipment. You know, that's like, no, that's expensive. Hey, that's expensive. For commercial business, great. It could definitely work. For a small Airbnb or multi-room, you know, property, it could actually do well. Especially with providing them, especially if you have a property that's like in Pazula, very high quality. But even in Pazula, you have fiber. So, and fiber at 200 megs a second comes in at 1,200 rand a month. So your question is, do I want 200 meg a second fiber or 500 meg a second Starlink internet? But the price difference isn't double or just over double the speed. It's almost quadruple or five times the price. That's pretty alarming.
Welcome now to the final segment of Tech Plus as we wrap it up for this week. Well, almost. Kane, something interesting you got there.
So we're taking a look at NASA, which is funding a telescope in South Africa to detect asteroids that could wipe out a city. And it's actually part of a bigger asteroid detection network. The Higher Education, Science and Innovation Blade has announced that the launch of the new Atlas Asteroid Alert System is now coming to South Africa. The system, operated by the University of Hawaii Institute for Astronomy and funded by the North American Space Agency, NASA, currently has two telescopes in Hawaii that cover the north. I always say the phone brand.
Yeah, okay.
In Hawaii.
Hawaii.
I'm having trouble saying that one.
You're right there.
Covering the northern hemisphere. Now, the telescopes have been built at the Al Saus Observatory in Chile and the Sutherland Observing Station in South Africa to scan the southern hemisphere. The two locations were selected for their access to the southern part of the sky as well as their time zones, which allow for night observation when in daytime in Hawaii. In Hawaii. That word is knotted in my tongue. So what's interesting here is, as they say, so there's two telescopes in Hawaii that cover the northern hemisphere, and that works well, but they want to expand on that network. Specifically in South Africa, the advantage is they can observe the night sky in South Africa during the day of Hawaii. So they can see what's happening once the sun is too bright for their own satellite imagery and things like that to detect, their telescopes to detect.
That's so cool.
So it's part of a network of observation. So basically the four telescopes are capable of scanning the entire dark sky every 24 hours for objects that could collide with the Earth. The construction of the two additional Atlas telescopes in South Africa and Chile is now complete. They have already begun operations, and the South African telescope Atlas Sutherland has already discovered its first near-Earth object. John Tonry, Atlas Principal Investigator and Professor at the University of Hawaii Institute for Astronomy, says an asteroid that hits the Earth can come at any time from any direction. So it's good to know that Atlas is now surveying all the sky all the time. The Atlas system is specifically designed to detect objects that approach very close to the Earth, closer than the distance of the moon, about 240,000 kilometers or 150,000 miles. The system can provide a one-day warning for a 10-meter diameter asteroid, which would be capable of city-level destruction, and up to 3 weeks' warning for a 100-meter diameter asteroid, which could have 10 times the destructive power of the recent Hunga Tonga volcano eruption if it were to strike the Earth. And here's where I find, this is what I find quite interesting, right? So it can give some preliminary warnings for an asteroid that is, you know, a certain size within a certain time frame, and bigger asteroids can be detected sooner. But the problem is, every single time there's a near-Earth asteroid, just something that passes by annually or biannually or every 10 years, and people know about it, it gets shot into the news. And everybody's like, oh no!
Yeah, the news have fun with it. You know, clickbait.
Asteroid's going to come near Earth, miss. It's only 135,000 kilometers away. You know, it's going to miss the Earth by that much.
But I'd rather not know about it.
Yeah, and also it becomes desensitizing. So if this thing does detect an asteroid, right, or something that's passing close to Earth or could potentially hit it, people are going to be like, oh, it's just another news story, you know? It's just another near-Earth object. And that's pretty alarming, because there is no joke about how much damage these things can cause.
Yeah.
There was a meteor, because it entered the atmosphere, there was a meteor in Russia a few years ago that, as it pierced the atmosphere, it broke, you know, the sound barriers and things like that. It shattered glass for like 150 kilometers radius.
Sure, I'm sure.
And people got injured from that glass breaking.
You know? You see, that's what's gonna really injure you.
Yeah, it's gonna be like, that's what's gonna kill you. Yeah, or, you know, damaged eardrums and things like that from the noise alone. But it is still a concern. I mean, we're not at any risk of it happening. Most of them just disintegrate in the atmosphere or even hit the Earth with minimal damage. But what's more important is, we spoke about on a previous tech show, it's the anti-collision technology, where they recently sent out a probe which was going to slam into asteroid Buna, I think it was called, and that would potentially show us whether we can knock an asteroid off course. It is a very important thing to have provisions for. I mean,
jeez, but listen, it really sounds like the movie. Don't look up.
Yeah,
that new movie newish movie on Netflix. If you haven't seen it yet, it's quite fun to watch over the weekend. But you know, people shouldn't watch it. I think a lot of people make the mistake. They watch that movie and they watch it in a serious way.
Yeah,
you shouldn't. It's almost like satire.
Yeah, we spoke about it last week.
Yeah, they're making fun of society, the way we are, our pop stars, and the way we use social media, the way we, you know, the media.
It's like
handles
a satire shot.
Yeah, you know? So don't, when you watch it, don't take it too seriously. But, you know, what you just spoke about, it really sounds just like the plot of that movie. Remember, they all looked up, and then you could see it coming.
I remember that.
Like, at night, there's this thing. It's not moving, but you know it's coming for you.
Yeah, I remember watching that. Now, as soon as you said that part, I remembered.
And also, did you see how the politicians started acting? You know, like saying "don't look up" and all that kind of stuff for their own gain. I mean, that's so accurate. It really is the way it works in this world of ours.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for our last topic, a hacker steals over $320 million from blockchain platform Wormhole. So developers behind the popular blockchain Bridge offered the hacker a $10 million bug bounty for info about the exploit and return of the stolen cryptocurrency. So what happened is, someone exploited the platform, stole $320 million. So the platform's bright idea was to offer the hacker, whoever he is, the anonymous hacker, $10 million for a bug bounty to explain how it was exploited and to return the stolen cryptocurrency. So if I was that hacker,
sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, you know, steal 320 million and be in trouble, or give 320 million back and make 10 million.
Yeah.
But these guys, they know what they're doing, man. They know how to hide and wash the money. So You know, will he do it? Who knows? But the hackers obviously stole that $324 million. I don't know if anyone's heard of Wormhole, but they're basically a platform which provides a connection that allows for the transfer of cryptocurrency between different decentralized finance blockchain networks. Wormhole said in a series of tweets Wednesday afternoon that thieves made off with 120,000 wrapped ETH, worth nearly $324 million at the time. The platform's network was also taken offline for maintenance as soon as it happened. So they're offering this bounty, hoping that people give the money back and things like that. But it really goes to show how important these platforms, when they're starting, you know, they're thinking about this $10,000 worth of deposits, or, you know, $100,000 worth of deposits. They don't really see how much it grows, you know, over a year or two or three or four, until you're very popular and you're dealing with hundreds of millions of dollars. And one malicious exploit that you haven't predicted can be the result of your platform losing $320 million.
Sure.
And there are some insurance companies out there that actually offer insurance to some of these exchanges and these platforms. And sometimes it's for $100 million, sometimes it's for $300 million. But those platforms have to pay every month. And every time you hear about a scam that happened where people lost money and they're not giving the money back, it was an exchange that operated without insurance. Which is scary.
Yeah, it is scary.
They got your money and they got no surety. You know, if it's exploited, it's exploited.
Ish.
So let's hope the hackers give the money back. It's not the first time something like this has happened. It won't be the last.
But no.
This is how we build secure technology.
Yeah.
With a path of broken hacked exchanges along the way. You got to find out how these exploits are happening in order to build preventative technology or methods to stop it from happening in the future. And the only way to do that is to have a few hacks.
Yeah.
So when I hear about a hack, yes, money's gone and that's a big problem. The onus is on the exchange or the provider to retrieve that money one way or another and return it to the original owners. That is one thing. But the other thing that I like about it, that I'm excited about when this kind of stuff happens, the bright side of it, is that the next month and the next year, we're going to build technologies that can prevent this kind of thing from happening. So when I'm operating on a platform that's been operating a long time, it's going to be secure, I'm going to be able to trust it, and there's only one way to get there. It's these crashes. And you don't use an exchange that has been hacked before, but other exchanges will put preventative measures in place to stop these kind of things from happening on their own platform. So crypto in general gets stronger, exchanges in general get stronger with this kind of thing happening. And you got to look at the brighter side to really understand the fuller picture, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that's it for Tech Plus for another week, Kane. And it feels like it was Tech Plus the crime edition today, because there was a lot of focus on scams. And,
people trying to close off January.
Yeah, and people stealing pylons and all that kind of stuff, you know?
It happens.
That was Tech Plus, the crime edition.
Crime edition.
Yes.
No, I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Ian. It was absolutely awesome, as usual. I'll see you next week. And to all our listeners, thanks so much for listening, and speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Kane, and enjoy the rest of your week and also your weekend.
Thank you very much.
Cheers
everyone. Bye-bye.